Hello and welcome to Big Trouble in Little Podcast, a show where there is themes of movies and they have a gimmick of ranking at the end of the month. Today is different. We go into the universe with a great series called Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and Andy chose Duet, Hippocratic Oath, and Trials and Tribulations, Enjoy.
Captain's log, it is 10:04 p.m. Eastern Time on March 20th, 2024, episode 278 of Big Trouble in Podcast. I'm Joe Dubs.
Captain's log supplemental. I'm Andy.
Yeah, something else with the captain. I'm Chaz.
I'm here.
Zach is here. Zach, you have two more weeks until you're back into your computer center. You're kind of getting pissed off at your phone, right?
Yeah, and now that's a maybe again too. So, but I'll talk about that later.
Oh God! Oh geez! Oh geez!
No.
but anyway, last week we did Chaz's episodes. This week we are doing Andy's. So, Andy, I'm gonna let you take it away as far as this is your Deep Space Nine. Episode picks, so take it away.
I like Deep Space Nine a lot, and I kept thinking it's hard to watch them because all the episodes, like it tells a story. Like each episode leads into the next, more or less. There's all these overarching storylines and stuff like that. And I wasn't going to do this at first, but I did finally discover some that you could more or less watch without knowing too much. And even then, like even these, I felt a little guilty for choosing them, but I just really liked. Really like Deep Space Nine. A lot of people like to whine, oh, it's not really a Star Trek. They don't even trek. It takes place in one place. Still, it's who cares? It's a Western in space is what it is. It's a Western town, and there's a sheriff and a barkeep and a bunch of other characters. And I don't know. I like it an awful lot, and I'm hoping you guys liked it too. The episodes I chose... the order we watched them in are kind of in the reverse order of serious. Oh, no, they're in. The first one is very serious. The second one is fairly serious. And the third one is silly.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's and did you choose it to have like Worf in the two episodes? Because like this is like when we first start seeing Worf when he's like investigating on Quark and all that stuff. But
yeah. Yeah, that's in season four. I think the season premiere of season four, Worf turns up, and at that point, like when he turns up, Sisko's like, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear about the Enterprise. That was a great ship." Because in one of the movies, they destroy it or something, and yeah. Worf's just he says he was at some like Klingon monastery or something, and he says, "I'm going to resign my commission. I'm going to quit Starfleet," and the season premiere, which is a double long episode, it's an hour and a half, is kind of about a bunch of bullshit they do with the Klingons, and Worf's a big help. And at the end, Sisko's like, "You know, I almost quit, and I know I would have regretted it." And of course, Worf's then like, "You know what? I'm gonna stay in the Federation. I'll stay here. I like it here." And then he's in the rest of the show, of course.
Yeah. So. The first episode you have is Duet, which is Duet. season one, episode 18.
This is the one I was always going to choose. I like this episode a lot. In fact, it's one of the most famous episodes of the show. And that's something to think about, too, is the three episodes I chose are not the three best episodes of the show. So if you liked these well enough, then there's even better stuff out there for you. But Duet is a season one episode, and it deals with, you know, the groundwork of the series, which is Bajor has been occupied by the Cardassian Alliance for 50 years, I think. And they established the Cardassians in Next Generation as bad guys. There's like a series of three episodes, and one of them we watched last time we did this, Chain of Command. Captain Picard is captured by the Cardassians, and the guy's telling him, oh, there's five lights. And Picard says, no, there's four. And it's like this old, I guess like the North Vietnamese and a bunch of other people actually used this weird thing where they would break people's minds by telling them misinformation and stuff like that. And that's what it's based on. And that's kind of where the genesis of the Cardassian Empire was, is it's based on that idea. And also they're very bureaucratic, if that makes sense. I don't know if that came through in any of these episodes, but they're all like famously good record keepers and stuff like that, which is a weird thing for a bad guy to be. But I think about it as there's that argument in D&D about lawful evil and chaotic evil. The chaotic evil is like traditional good old-fashioned evil, but then there's like lawful evil, which is like an evil government or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're that. They're the Star Trek personification of that.
The evil bookkeeper.
And okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so this episode, if I had to like put an analogy into it, right, is imagine like, I guess, a Nazi, which would be this Cardassian that is being held prison, is talking to, you know, Kira, who was in a concentration or labor camp on that planet and stuff.
She helped liberate it. She wasn't like a captive or whatever.
She was freeing her people, pretty much.
Major Kira was like some big shot in the Bajoran resistance. I can't remember her exact status in it, but it comes up in a ton of episodes, of course. Like, she runs into people who she used to be freedom fighters with, or people who were Cardassians or whatever. But yeah, it's a big recurring thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say this is probably one of my favorite Kira episodes, because I'm not really a big fan of Kira in the whole series as a whole. I'm not hating her, but like, I just didn't enjoy her character that well. But I thought she did really well in this episode, especially learning about, you know, her race and then the Cardassians, what happened, and the whole like swerves that happen in this episode where it's like everything's unfolding, where he's like, oh, I was this filing person, I was the greatest filer ever, and then he's like, I'm this leader. They like found out everything. And just the only thing I would say, like, questioning is like, she has a lot of emotions of what her people went through. I understand why Sisko let her investigate it and be like the head investigator, because she knows a lot about that planet and what she did there. But there's a lot of emotions that could have clouded her judgment, which he was kind of messing with her a little bit through emotions to like, hey, like, I'm messing with you the whole time and leading you around with all these lies and stuff. And then obviously the big lie comes out later, which we'll get to.
Oh, you mean the Cardassian was,
yeah,
he was relying on her prejudice to get him into trouble, because Odo reveals that someone had requested information on Major Kira at some point in the past or something, and it's implied that was him. He was saying, okay, I need to figure out who at Deep Space Nine is going to catch me, mm-hmm, when I come there and I have this weird syndrome, whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah. What about you guys, Zach? What about you? Do you have anything to say about this episode?
What's wrong with his face?
It's Cardassian.
No, Odo. What's wrong with his face?
He's a changeling.
He's a changeling.
He has like a fake face. It just looks fake.
Yeah, we didn't choose any Odo episodes because they're all very lore heavy. But Odo is a changeling. He's basically like a liquid that can form into whatever he wants, like stuff or other people. And he's not great at it. He's been separated from his race, so he never like learned how to be really good at making faces. There's one of the best episodes of the show is the scientist who found Odo comes back, and you kind of get some background about how they figured out what Odo was and how he figured out how to shapeshift and a bunch of stuff like that. But basically he was like a goo and they found him, and then they only found out that he was sentient like way later. And okay. and now he's a sheriff. Now he's head of security.
Nice. Yeah.
He has a bucket, by the way, that he like goes into liquid form sometimes.
Sleeps in a bucket.
Yep.
Sleeps. He's like a vampire, but water.
Yep. Whoa. I think in the next episode, Jem Hadar talk about his race later on, but we'll get to that.
I guess. See, even then, I couldn't avoid any spoilers or anything. Jesus.
Also,
I call him something different though, so it doesn't have to be a spoiler if we don't point it out.
Yeah, true. I didn't realize there was anything to it.
There you go.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing. I was like, man, why does he look like he's wearing like six masks?
Yeah, it's hard. I could have explained every single character and all of their backgrounds, but sometimes you just gotta let things go.
I did. I just let it go and just went with it. I was like, maybe he has a face. He has a condition.
All right. Well, Odo looks weird, but did you guys like the episode at all?
Yeah, I also I already knew about the Kardashians. I was already familiar with them.
Kardashians.
They tried to break Picard's mind that one time. I mean, they break everybody else's mind. So, but no, yeah, it's a good episode. I liked it. I liked all the twists and the the end especially was like, whoa.
Yeah, and like especially him like finally breaking and revealing like why he was doing what he was doing, and he's just trying to make his people pay for how horrible they were. And it was rough. And then of course finally it seems like okay, we've reached a point of breaking the cycle, and then he ends up getting stabbed.
Yeah, they like you're like holding your breath, and then you finally exhale because they're walking him through the promenade, and he's like gonna go home, and they're like, look, sometimes you just gotta worry about being a good person. And then he dies, and you're like, god damn it, fuck you.
I know. Yeah. I was like, what? No, why? I was really upset.
They're like, yoink, gotcha.
I blame Kieran.
That's like American History X. It's kind of what that reminded me of.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of blame Kira and Odo for that a little bit, because they did see the crowd, especially the oh my god, what's their race called again? Kira's race?
The Bajorans.
Bajorans. They were just like gathering around because they knew that dude was there. I'm like, come on, this is like a Lee Harvey Oswald type of thing going on here, where Jack Ruby comes in.
You shot the president.
I was thinking about that guy who like hanged out waiting for that dude that like killed his daughter or whatever and just shot him like when he was being taken away. That's what I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the payphone guy.
Yeah, he just hanged out in the background and just went bam.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what happened here.
Except that guy deserved it.
Yeah, the pedophile.
This dude was just a file keeper.
Yeah,
a cowardly file keeper,
like horrendously guilty one.
Yeah, who had like clearly been traumatized by.
He's like, I could have done something. God damn it, you were just a nerd.
Aren't we all just nerds watching the horrors around us?
Yeah,
to some extent.
I like I said, I did like this Kira episode, especially like when she found out it wasn't the dude. He's like, why did you do this? Like, why? Like, she starts to have like compassion for him.
Yeah, when you realize what's going on, it like, I don't know, it like breaks my heart kind of. Like, I don't know what it is, but I get choked up even though you really, I don't know. I don't know why it gets that reaction at me, but it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, well, it's because I think it plays on some really, really strong touches of humanity. I mean, again, there's a lot of parallels to horrible things that have happened. Like the equivalent would be, you know, you look at the Holocaust. I mean, it would be like if someone who was just a clerk for the Nazis at a concentration camp was effectively, like, you know, seeing what was happening and just felt powerless and couldn't do anything, and through guilt played out this big thing to try to expose other people, and just nothing out of nothing other than just the guilt that they had. So they, instead of just coming out to say it, they like played up this big thing like they were a part of it so that they could maybe get other people exposed. And then someone who was, you know,
yeah,
maybe they family members were persecuted, you know, decided, you know what, no, you're not guilty of this, it's okay. And then an angry Jewish person kills that guy.
Mm. Someone who's there, I this episode does what sci-fi does best, and it is makes a story about the real world, but all the players are kooky made up sci-fi bullshit. And I have an interesting time thinking about, like, what if they had tried to do this story, but it was about, you know, like Nazi soldiers and the Holocaust and stuff. And I don't think they could get away with telling this exact same story that way. I think a lot of people would be unsatisfied with that, but there's something about seeing it in Deep Space Nine that seems, oh, that was a good story. That was satisfying. And now I'm thinking about stuff.
I mean, you're right. There is a that's a benefit of fiction, being able to use things that, again, use parallels to reality, but because they're not, it allows you to play with those emotions and still get the point across without it becoming too ham-fisted and just being too just on the nose. If you were to do it that way, then a lot of people get turned away from it, and then they miss the point because they're too focused on the superficial layer. Attack on Titan had a lot of those same problems. It's unrelated, but I mean, kind of related. There were a lot of similar themes to Attack on Titan, actually, and it's and then it gets pushed in, and everyone thinks, "Oh, well, I can kind of relate to this person," and they look through it. Well, you're just a Nazi sympathizer. That's those forums are really fun to look and just read the arguments people get into.
I always see people trying to make arguments that the guy who created it is like a war crime apologist or something in Japan. I don't know the details of that, but
yeah. Helldivers too, because the whole thing is like spreading democracy. They're like, oh, you like to be a Nazi.
Yeah. That's the joke. It's Starship Troopers. That's the joke. It's just
We're here to liberate you.
Heavy handed.
Liberate.
That's what you're supposed to do. Yeah.
Andy, I think you're right, because like, back then when Deep Space Nine was out, like, yeah, there was an internet and there was like message boards, but no, it wasn't like social media where people were, you know, have to connect the dots and show like, oh, you like to give emotions to Nazis, like hatred or not hatred, like compassion and all that empathy, stuff. So, empathy.
I think the old Twilight Zone probably could have pulled that story off.
Give comparison, go ahead, Zach. Before I'll give my comparison.
We were talking about how like we don't think any other TV show could have done that. I think that's the only other one that could have pulled that off, that same story, but actually be what it's supposed to be about. But no, and then the other thought crossed my mind is like, God damn, what if they tried to do this story today? It would be fucking awful.
They couldn't do it. They absolutely couldn't do it. I hate to be like, oh, you couldn't make that today, blah, blah, blah. Like, people would read too far into it the wrong way, and they would be like, oh, no, all Nazis are bad. You're trying to portray a Nazi in a sympathetic light. And it'd be like, well, God damn it. There's more nuance to it than that, but some people don't want to see that. They don't want to see
insert anyone. Insert the Spider-Man meme. You're a fascist. There's two Spider-Mans pointing each
way. Yeah, exactly right.
but so
the word means anymore either.
So to give context, actually, so the season one of Deep Space Nine was in 1993. There's a famous movie about the Holocaust that was made in 1993.
Jurassic Park. Well,
so since we're not,
that's a really good movie to make out to.
Oh man, I was gonna be like, right, we spent no expense, right director, but halfway there. Yeah. So yeah, Schindler's List for the viewers or listeners. There was a lot of Schindler's List. There's a lot of backstory behind how that movie wouldn't have been made by anybody else other than Spielberg, because basically Spielberg had funded and kept so many of these studios alive, making so much money for them. And he said, God damn it, I'm making this movie. Like, if it wasn't for that drive, that movie wouldn't have been made. And the reason why is because board executives did not think a movie like that would fly. Like, no one's going to want to watch this. It's horribly depressing. It's too on the nose, blah, 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 blah. And of course it is, you know, a successful, amazing film that is also still horribly depressing. So it's okay. Sometimes things can be really sad and really fucked up about and be tied to reality. But, you know, like you said, in a syndicated television show, people weren't going to want to watch that. So sci-fi is a good way to bridge that, where you can get those tropes and those themes and tie to humanity without it necessarily being too spot on. Mm-hmm. I think this episode's beautiful. Like I cried. Like there was emotional diarrhea. Like I wasn't I can't believe I was like that. But like, and what got me was more. It wasn't so much when he died. I was just angry when that happened. I was like, fucking shit. And then I sat there. I was like, God damn it, this was so well written. Like I was mad, but I also could enjoy it that it was good. But it was the scene where he broke down. That's rough. Like I've watched my grandfather break down and cry over the shit that he saw in Vietnam. Like it's hard. Like war is terrible. So yeah. So it was just it was a great episode. I mean, we can go on about this probably for another hour.
I got one thing to say. This is like a lot of years into the fucking future. And when they're like trying to like blow up a picture because they're like, it's too blurry. It takes like a minute for them
to. They're like trying to see him in that picture.
Yeah. It broke my immersion a little bit. I'll just say that.
It was a little silly.
Yeah.
They like construct his face or something with this 2D picture. It's like, that's wow. Using the heel tool in Photoshop and you just like use it.
Yeah. Oh, man. But I'm going to say it right away. I'm going to recommend all these episodes. So I don't think there's not going to be one Star Trek episode that I'm not going to recommend. So,
I mean, yeah, same for me, of course, because I'm the one who's picking all these. I thought for a real long time I didn't want to choose this episode to go first because I knew we would have the most to say about it, but I just couldn't find two episodes that came before it that I wanted to watch as badly, and a bunch of them like really build on what came before them. And I also didn't want to just choose the pilot because that seemed like a bit of a cop-out, despite the fact that the pilot's actually extremely good. It's really, I mean, the show does get off to a running start, but there's another, you know how they say Next Generation grows the beard. Well, DS9 gets great when Sisko shaves his head. When DS9 shaves the head, it gets like, oh, holy shit, amazing.
Get the little goatee thing going.
Yeah, just his look was different. I was like, he looks like he means business now.
Yeah, he shaves his head and everyone's like, oh my God, he looks so mean now.
Yeah, it's like when I watched his first episode, I was like, I thought he looked different. And then the next one was like, oh, there it is. There he is.
Badass Sisko. Yeah, that's how I know. Turns
up like that and it's like, oh my God, now he's like nuking planets and committing war crimes.
If you ever get to Deep Space Nine, the chemistry between Worf and Sisko is fucking awesome. And like you get like a little bit of it like at the start of the next episode, which
I saw Worf a real Star Trek character show up and I got excited.
A real Star
Trek. Well, the Chief's in there, Chief O'Brien, and of course he's barely in Next Generation, but he is from Next Generation.
So before we jump into that, Zach, did you recommend it?
Oh, no. Yes.
Okay. Same. Sorry, just continuity, making sure we get across.
I don't recommend media that glorifies Nazis.
I don't think I glorify it.
It's great. Watch it.
There's a really nice... I've been rewatching. This is for when we say what we watch later. I watched a bunch of DS9 just because I was trying to choose which episodes to watch. And then also, even after I chose which episodes to watch, I kept watching it. I'm just like jumping around watching all my favorite episodes. But there's a great... When Worf first turns up at the beginning of season 4, there's a really nice scene where he and Chief O'Brien just sit down at Quark's bar sharing a drink. And they just talk about the Enterprise for like a scene. It's a really cool scene. I like it a lot. But... we're gonna jump ahead. This is season 5.
When four?
Four?
It was four.
Hippocratic Oath. Yep. It's four.
Yeah.
So this is the Dominion War is all but began. The whole second half of Deep Space Nine deals with the Dominion War, which is the whole point of Deep Space Nine is it's near this wormhole, and you go through the wormhole and you wind up in a whole nother part of space that's like 1,000 light years away or something.
And, that's how wormholes work.
Yeah, that's how wormholes work exactly. And so they can go back and forth through it. And they've been like exploring and stuff. And they discover that only in the Gamma Quadrant it's controlled by the Dominion. And they have genetically engineered predator like super soldiers. And all of the gyms are, they can turn invisible. They're all like super great combatants. Their skin is made of like rock. They're just like all the like, genetically engineered super soldiers.
They put milk in their blood. Regular old
guys. Yeah, they're just addicted to fucking opiates.
Yes, and they're also
they're super soldier meth heads.
Well, what's it? Something white. I can't remember what it's called.
Case white or something like that.
Something like that.
Psy white.
There's a few episodes where it's a plot point, because there's another episode where a whole roundabout. White. There's another episode where a whole roundabout of the crew goes to a planet, and there's also like a bunch of Jem'Hadar and a Vorta there. Vorta's like their commander, and they're like negotiating with each other, and it's kind of the same thing. It's like, we're about to run out of Ketracel White. That's what it's called. We're about to run out of the stuff, and I'm worried about them, and I want to make peace with you guys because they're just going to kill me as soon as I run out of that stuff. It's another interesting episode the same way. But this episode is, it's not like one of the best episodes of the show or anything, but it's a standalone that shows some of the good writing in the Dominion War, and it also shows that the episode was never scared of like tearing down what it built up with characters. And what I mean by that is Chief O'Brien and Dr. Bashir are like best friends. Like in every episode, they're palling around and they play darts at Quark's bar like several times a week, and they go to the Hollis suite and they go kayaking together. Whatever. They're like their best good friends. And then this episode comes along and like fucks that all up. And they do this kind of stuff with characters all the time. You know, it causes drama, of course, but it's not like they're killing characters, even though they do kill a major character, and I will not reveal who, because that is a major spoiler. But it's not killing characters, but it's kind of that principle of like, you know, kill your darlings, in that they like spent four seasons building up this friendship. And now obviously they're friends again a couple episodes later, but there's lasting impacts of what happens in an episode. And I find that really interesting, because it also deals with,
it lingers.
It does linger. And it deals with, duty. Like the name of the episode is Hippocratic Oath. The doctor has taken an oath to like help people, but then also they're at war, and Chief O'Brien understands that. So there's an oath to the Federation, so it plays with that some too.
It's not even just that. I think it's because he is a soldier, like in that kind of sense, like because he knows he's in war and he knows the risks that are involved. I think he's equally as concerned about their survival. I think it's a matter of he's looking at the risk of, I don't think there's a way we survive, and we shouldn't throw our lives away to try to help our enemy. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting dynamic. What a dilemma.
Well, Bashir, he like in the beginning, they like try to plot to like get away. And then obviously that's when they learned about like the one Jem'Hadar is like off the fucking juice, off the bean. And he's like, whoa, what the fuck? Like, how are you alive and shit? And like he like studies him and literally finds nothing, which is really interesting, because do we get to see him later on, Andy?
I don't recall.
Yeah, because I was like, man, how it just must have been a weird anomaly of him surviving in some fashion. Or I mean, we'll never know, because of all the soldiers being like, fuck this, we hate these humans, let's kill them.
Maybe he does come. I can't remember. It just seemed like an opportunity to have like a Hugh type character, like in Next Generation, where you bring him back like two seasons later and it's a nice little surprise, but I can't recall.
I think I remember him in the future, but I just don't know.
I can't remember either.
Because it's like, that question is never answered, like how he got off the juice and is still alive, and it made me really interested if the other soldiers, if they like, you know how like when people get off drugs, they, you know, have withdrawals and stuff, and they do all that cold turkey. Like, if they get past that stage, do they live? Who knows? Like, we know they die based off of what the guy says.
Well, apparently they die because he kills them, or they kill him, or we don't know.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite parts of that whole episode is, they're like about to get on the roundabout and he's like, you should just go. I'm going to have to kill all my men. And Bashir's like, that's horrible. You can't do that. Just come with us or do something. And he looks at O'Brien, who he clearly does not like, but he says, you were a soldier, right? He says, yeah. He says, you explain it to him. And then he just leaves. I like that a lot. This is a really cool scene.
Yeah.
I also like when the O'Brien's making his like pulsator thing that like shoots out like fucking lightning and it hits that dude. It
hits the guy standing like just off to the side.
Oh yeah, that guy gets fucking juiced, man.
He tore his ACL, his PCL, his MCL, all of it tore at the same time.
Yeah. God, that horse had to get put down. God damn. It blew his leg the fuck
that's
out.
What he said too.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, I gotta be killed. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the guy's like, no. Just don't kill him yet.
There's more beans for everybody else if you kill me.
More or less. More bean juice.
Yeah, the whole dynamic between Bashir and O'Brien. I love O'Brien. O'Brien's like one of my favorite characters in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, they work on his character a lot in Deep Space Nine. You learn about him, and he's got a wife and a kid, and all this other stuff goes on. You find out that he was a soldier during the initial Cardassian War. That's why he like kind of hates him, but he comes around a little bit.
Yeah. His whole like, when he's like, he shoots fucking Dr. Bashir's fucking work. He's like, see, now it's done. Now can we go now?
What a bastard.
Yeah. It's a very asshole thing, but at the same time, it's like, I get why he did it.
Yeah.
He did it to save them.
Did he do the right thing, though?
Right. Well, I mean, again, depends on your perspective. Did he do the morally right thing to help? No, but did he do the thing to guarantee their survival? Yes.
That's all he cared about. He just wanted to make sure he and Bashir live. That's all he cares about.
And I think,
so did he do the right thing?
Maybe.
It depends. It's the point of view, I guess, because Bashir, with his Hippocratic oath, he wants to help and, you know, help them out.
And also, and this is why I like Deep Space Nine so much, is it brings this stuff up all the time. This is Star Trek. If this was happening in Next Generation, don't you think they would have figured out a way to save the Jem'Hadar? Don't you think they would have had a happy ending?
Yes.
Picard would have.
There would have been some, like, fuck around, and it would have figured some way.
But actually, if we use the repulsor disc to beam...
Bob, shut up.
Weird radiation into this fucking quadrant of the second moon, then we can... No, not in Deep Space Nine. That shit just... It happens sometimes in Deep Space Nine, but seldom. Usually in Deep Space Nine, just like real shit happens and real lessons get learned. And I'm not saying it's all doom and gloom. It's not like a grim, dark show. There's still some nice moments, which, you know, we'll discuss right after this. But it's... They tried to be more serious. They did a good job, I think, of trying to grow the series up a little bit. But for some reason, the fan base, like hardcore fans, love Deep Space Nine, but like the general public stopped knowing Star Trek existed after TNG ended.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I feel like if TNG is like the first child. It's like the child that like does well in school, does what they're told. It's like the premier like student child, I guess.
Premier child.
Then the edgy younger brother who's off, you know, listening to emo bands. It's Deep Space Nine.
He's edgy. Was there like a reason why Deep Space Nine didn't do as good, really?
I don't understand it if so. I think it would have helped if they might have made a movie. I think that's part of why the Next Generation exists in people's consciousness as much as it does, is because they made four shitty movies. I don't know. Also, I think maybe timing was part of it, is when Next Generation came out, there wasn't a lot of sci-fi, but in the mid-90s, there was a ton of sci-fi on television.
There were Babylon, a lot of stuff.
There was a lot of competition.
And Sliders.
Nine, yeah, you know, stuff with Sliders and Stargate and Babylon 5 and all this other shit was all on the air at the same time. And in fact, Deep Space Nine had to compete against two other Star Treks in its life. It had to compete against the end of Next Generation and the beginning of Voyager. So it's just, I think it was a crowded market. And I don't know, maybe part of it was like, oh, it's too grimdark and children didn't watch it or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, I can't point to a specific reason. I think it's just a lot of little things like that. And it sucks because this series is really great. And I always struggle with trying to name which one is my favorite, this or the Next Generation. But I lean Deep Space Nine more and more. What'd you say?
Were you saying Dubs?
I said it lasted 7 seasons, so it did have some type of following.
Yeah,
it did well enough to last as long as Next Generation.
I always think I think Next Generation was popular on like real channels like CBS or whatever, and I think they both are syndicated, I believe. But whenever I think about Deep Space Nine, I think about like the Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Star Trek Next Gen got syndicated on like big channels. It was like on Fox. It was on like a bunch. I remember mostly. Yeah, CBS.
And I don't think Deep Space Nine got that treatment as much. So yeah. I don't know. That might be why.
I can't even remember. Like, weren't there like reruns? Like reruns of TNG and stuff would play after wrestling.
On what, like TV or whatever?
Mm-hmm. On both, I can't remember if it was USA or if it was Spike, but they would play. They play reruns of TNG.
I think it was probably Spike.
I don't think that was USA. I think it was Spike because USA always had like the really spicy shows.
I watched the YouTube video. Max,
but that's what they're pushing for.
I watched a YouTube video recently about Spike TV and the founding of it, and it kind of took over. Where I think TNN ended, and there were TNN bumps that were like The Rock yelling at the TNN logo, and there's also one of Data and the TNN logo, and I just remember thinking, there you go.
That must be it, yeah.
Yeah. We also got to talk about the side plot that happened.
Yeah, no, and now we get to talk about Worf trying to stay. Now, when Worf was on TNG, he was head of security, and now that he is at DS9, he's head of ops. He's not security.
Yeah, he answers.
You can take the Klingon out of the security, but you can't take that security out of the Klingon.
And he can't deal with answering to a bucket of goo.
Oh, there you go. You saw Odo do his weird changeling shit in this episode.
Yes.
Yeah. It makes more sense now.
Yeah.
I wasn't really sure what that was.
And I'm obviously this is the first episode we're getting to see Quark, by the way,
I did a huge disservice not choosing a Quark episode. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. There's so much Quark lore in this fucking season. This is just scratching the surface, bro.
He's great. Quark's great. His brother's great. His nephew's great. The Grand Nagus is great. The Grand Nagus is played by, what's the guy's name? Wallace Shawn. The guy who Princess Bride, inconceivable, that guy, the little short guy. He's the head
for the classic blunder.
Yeah, he's the head of their race. He's in charge of that whole race. He's their emperor president guy, and he turns up a lot, and he's hilarious.
Oh yeah, of course.
In the Star Trek Online MMO game, Quark's nephew. Has his own ship. It's fucking hilarious. So, but yeah, the whole Worf stepping on Odo's fucking turf was like funny as shit because like Worf is like, this man should be arrested. Like, why are we letting him do this stuff? And Worf needs to understand this is not the Enterprise. And just seeing Sisko being like, hey man, this ain't the Enterprise. This is a different, we're like a fuck. It's like the old West and stuff, so they have their own personality and how they handle things.
Well, you had a reason for why, and again, Sisko trusts his security officer to take care of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But Worf's got that fucking Klingon Batman autism justice, where he's like, I can't let it go. I've got to fucking make sure the justice is paid.
But he's hiding in the fucking rafters and stuff, watching him do the. do the deal and stuff, and he's like, ha ha, I caught you red-handed.
You are under arrest.
Fucking Odo is a fucking in the bag. He like morphed into the bag. Even the guy that was like selling the gem and stuff, like, what the fuck is going on here?
I was gonna infiltrate their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're fucked up.
That's what I like about I know we talked about this last episode about like the serialized writing format of episodes, but them doing like the main plot with Bashir and O'Brien and then having this subplot is like, that's how you build character. This is how you introduce new characters and stuff, and just how they do this type of writing in this episode is just like chef's kiss, in my opinion. And seeing Sisko chill, by the way, while he's I don't know what he was working on, by the way. And that baseball has kind of meaning, by the way, too.
Some kind of weird futuristic metronome or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume the baseball had meaning.
It does.
Baseball.
Yes.
It was that guy in the episode of X-Files where that alien was playing baseball. That's who Sisko is. He traveled backwards in time to play baseball.
Well, he watched the movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come.
Yes.
We're going to have an X-Files episode kinda. One day. I swear to God, we're gonna do it.
And Andy was talking about wormholes, by the way. There's stuff with these people called the Prophets, which is, you learn about that in the first episode. And then later on, like, throughout the season, you get more information about the Prophets and stuff, but...
Unfortunately, the Bajoran religious stuff is some of my least favorite episodes. Like when Kai Winn turns up, man, she sucks. I know she's a villain and you're supposed to hate her. She just sucks. She's boring and I hate her and she's mean and I wish she died.
Yes.
Is she hot?
No.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, who cares?
You wouldn't let her kill you?
Nope.
No.
Close. Nope.
I'd kill her.
Zach and Chaz, did you guys have anything you wanted to bring up about this episode?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, it only took the first episode to watch it. Fuck, I want to watch this series now, and it's on my short list now. But
now I got to watch 3 Star Trek series. Just 4, I guess. I still plan on watching Voyager too.
Yeah, me too. Like, honestly, I was going to start it this week, but I just got sucked into Deep Space Nine. I'm rewatching all my favorite episodes now.
I like the dinosaur soldier rock predator people.
Jim Hadar.
That are addicted to opiates.
That's right. That's exactly what they are.
I'm pretty sure those are my people. I'm pretty sure those are just people from McDowell County translocated into space.
There you go.
So they're sure. West Virginians.
Yeah, they're just Virginia coal miners that are addicted to opiates.
They'll fucking kill you over it.
So I guess I only needed the 2 episodes because it sounds like you guys are convinced to watch the whole series. But just in case, I chose one silly fun episode.
I'm so glad you chose this. I laughed out loud so much while watching
this episode. It's so clever. I love this episode. The writing is so good. But real quick, just as an aside, I wanted to tell you guys briefly the synopsis of the episode that this supplanted in my choices. There's one other silly episode, and I knew I was going to choose one of them, but not both. I don't want to choose 2 silly episodes. But Dubs gave me the perfect lead into it, is why I want to talk about it, because Sisko keeps a baseball on his desk. He loves baseball, and he goes to the Hollow Suite and watches old baseball games from the 21st century or whatever. This Vulcan comes to the station during the Dominion War. They're like there for shore leave or something. Mm-hmm. And this Vulcan has like an all Vulcan staff. Like his whole bridge staff is Vulcan because he says, this is the most efficient way to run a Federation starship. I only have Vulcan officers and they all have Vulcan logic and they're all Vulcan and I love them. And like they just, they're all like really like shitty and like that. And, This Vulcan and Sisko went to the academy together and like kind of don't like each other. Like they're colleagues, but also like fuck that guy. It's kind of the what you get out of it. And they're arguing about how, oh, of course Vulcans would be better at your ragtag group. You got like a Klingon and you got like a
Do they play baseball?
Yes, they play baseball. They play a game of baseball. That's hilarious.
I can tell where this is going. He plays baseball against the Vulcans. He's like,
we could beat you at something. And the Vulcan's like, I'll even let you choose. You choose something, and we'll do it, and you try to beat us at it. And Captain Sisko's like, baseball. We'll play baseball. So they go to the holosuite, and they like – Captain Sisko doesn't have enough people on his direct staff, so he has to get Odo and Quark. I think Quark's brother and Quark's brother's girlfriend, the Dabo girl.
Yeah.
They're all a baseball team, and they play against a team of Romulans, and it's hilarious. It's a great episode, but it's not quite as hilarious as Trials and Tribulations, which is why it's
okay.
Trials and Tribulations came out to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the original Star Trek series. So they wanted to do an homage to it. And boy, howdy, do they ever.
Yeah, they did.
Had you seen the episode that this references yet, Zach, the original?
No, that episode's like later in the show. I think it's like the third season, actually.
I guess you'll have a greater appreciation of it now, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit. And it was pretty authentic, too, like how well they replicated the look of the sets and everything and the way it was shot. I was even like, are you even using like heavier film grain for those scenes?
That's what I thought. Like, they even like the saturation and the brightness is off when they're on the actual old sets. It looks really authentic. They did a great job.
Yep. That's what I'm most familiar with right now is the old show.
But yeah, there's some time traveling fuckery, and they go back to an episode of the original series, the one with the Tribbles.
Oh God!
Yeah, you're mentioning an episode not ending in serious nature, but I feel like the way this ended was the most serious of all three.
It has the worst implications.
It has the worst implications. They're infested with Tribbles. Stay McCork.
I think my favorite part of this whole episode is when they're in like the cafe area and stuff, and they're like, look at the Klingons, and they look back at Worf and like what happened?
We do not discuss it with outsiders.
Yeah. It is a long story.
And that's the only explanation to my knowledge they've ever given as to why Klingons look different in the old series.
Yeah.
I don't even think they had like makeup. They just looked like regular humans, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they
like jerks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They didn't even bother to like paint their face or anything.
There's a ton of like really clever and fun interactions and dialogue when they're in the past. But honestly, I think one of the most underappreciated parts of this episode is the dialogue that the two stooges from the Federation have. The like Department of Temporal Disturbances or whatever. Like, they both have really snappy, like almost noir-esque dialogue with each other. I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we went back and there was the Enterprise, there was Kirk, and it was like, oh, that man's a mess.
Sisko said something and they go, oh, thank God, we're really glad you said that. We don't like it when you do the other thing.
Like, oh yeah, predestination. How do you know why I didn't have to go back in time?
Yeah. Like the banter like that, I agree. It was really funny.
There's also that idiotic conversation between Bashir and O'Brien where the girl is like hitting on him and he's like, that might be my grandmother. I might have to hook up with her. I might not exist.
Bashir, shut
the fuck up.
Yeah. Some Futurama shit before that.
It's immediately what I thought about, the past nastification. As it were in Futurama.
I did the pasty and the nasty.
Yeah. He's like, don't you get it, you fool? You're your own grandfather.
and here's something really interesting. You know that episode where they go back in time and they become the UFO at Roswell?
Yeah.
That is a reference to a completely different Deep Space Nine episode.
Oh, that's awesome. Fucking nerds, I love it.
The Futurama writers were a fan of Deep Space Nine, at least.
Oh yeah, I know, that's for sure. Good. What I've found over time of watching Star Trek is that people who went on to make good television shows like Star Trek, and they love referencing it.
This and Twilight Zone. It's pretty much every TV show writer. You just watch those two shows and okay, I guess I can write now. I'll just rip these off.
Not Captain a bad idea.
Captain Kirk was jacked back then.
Dude, people, and I wanted to say something about that too, real quick. Everybody's like, William Shatner always talks like how he did in that Twilight Zone episode for some reason. You know, there's something on the wing, something. And I was watching Star Trek. I'm like, he doesn't really talk like that in this show.
No,
it's very overblown.
Yeah. Thing. That whole reputation came from one episode of television. That just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, sometimes like when he gets like serious and stuff, he like does get it into it, but not like hardcore about it.
He has something I'll call the Shatner pause, but it's like, it's just like something he does for dramatic effect when something happens usually.
Yeah.
He does it more in the movies, honestly, the pauses.
Yeah. I could believe that. It's a movie. It's a film. It's a motion picture. He has to be more dramatic.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I also like when they have to dress up for the occasion of going back in time and being with the Enterprise and stuff, and they're like, "You got the colors wrong." And Bashir's like, "I'm a doctor, a scientist. I don't fucking study history.
A doctor, not a historian." Yeah.
And
then Dax comes out in a miniskirt. Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way,
I think I'm gonna like history.
Yeah, I want to bring up Dax because I did
didn't choose any Dax episodes either.
Yeah. She is a species called the Trill, which is like this slug thing that goes into people's body and use the body as a host and stuff. So yeah, you hear a lot of slug. Yeah, you hear a lot of references like that she was a man in other bodies and stuff. So that's Sisko knows Dax as a man that's now in a woman's body, which is
why she calls her old man.
I don't know. This is, I think they're trying to groom children.
that was made today for Star Trek.
Yeah.
So it's a mind flayer parasite is what it is. So it crawls into somebody's little eye tear duct thing and takes over their brain.
It's a brain slug. Like,
her whole name is Jadzia Dax. But Dax is the symbiote, and Jadzia is like the humanoid. There's a bunch of Trill, and they all have those spots on the side of their head. But only like the best of the best Trill get the parasite, and the parasites have all lived like multiple lives. And when you bond with them, you get all their experience. So Jadzia Dax has lived, I think this is her seventh lifetime or something. Yeah. So every once in a while, she talks about Curzon Dax or something.
It's kind of neat. It's some pretty neat lore. Yeah, I kind of picked up something like that was going on, but yeah, another Futurama reference though. So the brain slugs. What's wrong? Feed it. It's starving.
It is right.
I think it's starved to death.
I did like Dax where she was like, "Oh, he looks dreamy, his eyes and everything," and he's like, "Stop hitting on Kirk," and he's like, "No, the fucking." Spock.
Yeah. He's just standing there looking all dour and perturbed all the time, like how he always does.
Pissed off, yep.
It was really edited off. Well. The look of it, the filter that they use and stuff. And
I like that they add them into the backgrounds of shots. That's my favorite stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like it's out of place. It looks good.
Yeah.
Yep.
None of that AI shit where they have to pretend Kate Middleton's still alive.
That's funny
from now because she's allegedly going to prove she's still alive, but it's funny now, damn it.
The Tribble becomes a problem. Oh, yeah, the whole thing about following this guy that apparently is a Klingon that like got facial construction to look like a human. To go on Kirk's ship to pretty much kill him. My bad.
Whoop whoop.
I hit the space bar by accident.
You're gonna have to go back in time and fix that later. Yeah.
Yeah. Temporal.
Yes. Don't bring any tribbles back with you.
Yes.
But yeah. So, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, they had that weird plot with that guy, which again, it was just they had to put a villain in there somehow, and I appreciated it.
Yeah, no, it's a neat episode. I mean, in a way, they kind of like they not that they say it's the direct explanation for why Klingons look the way they do, but they kind of give you something to kind of say what they would look like because they give you something to kind of lean on in the fact that this guy has the facial surgery and looks human and all that. So I don't know, it's fine. Anyway.
But yeah, especially after watching Duet, I wanted to make sure everyone had a nice, easy come down at the end.
I also appreciated how much Worf hated the Tribbles.
Yes.
Yeah. They're filthy, disgusting. Yeah. They multiply so quickly. He's so mad about it.
Also, like, I feel like this was a good primer to get ready to watch the original episodes later. Get you used to that feel and everything.
Yeah, I need to do that. Maybe I should do that before I dive into
Voyager.
I
watch episodes of Klingons, the Klingon Death Squads eradicating Tribbles.
I also did like the kind of like the reason why they wanted the temporal police investigators to leave because the Tribbles are like on the fucking the deep space, the station and stuff.
Well, Sisko was like, they were like, did they ask about it? No, they never asked. So I wasn't going to tell them.
What do you think they did with them, Tribbles? Do you think they, like, scanned them to a different planet or something to take over?
No or idea. They
incinerated them.
Send them into the nearest neutron star.
Sent them through the wormhole.
Yeah.
Back in time to where Khan's planet is.
Wow.
They sent them back in time to Kronos. They're the reason the Klingons hate them so much. Yeah. Predestination.
That's what I was going to say. It's their fault. Oh, that's actually kind of funny.
The time loop is closed.
All right, so you guys said you like Deep Space Nine. You're going to watch it now.
Yes, for me.
Good.
Ooh, oh, goodness.
It sounds like you were thrilled.
Yeah. I was thrilled then when I watched them. I'm a sleepy boy now, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But yeah, I love Deep Space Nine very much. It really is. It's just a Western in space, and it has a lot of that heavy-hitting writing that just doesn't get boring. There's a few episodes that kind of suck, but I mean, honestly, they're all fine.
Yeah. It's like Twilight Zone, like even the lowest like episodes where it's like not great, it's still watchable.
Yeah, it's still, that was okay. But then the good episodes are like legendarily great.
Mm-hmm.
I really want you guys to watch In the Pale Moonlight. That's one of the best pieces of television writing that has ever existed. I love that episode. But it's got spoilers in it, so I can't think you'll watch it.
I'll get there someday.
One day.
Zach, what about you? Do you recommend this episode?
Yeah, I'll recommend this episode. I was able to appreciate it more because now I'm all familiar with like the old show. So it was like I had fuzzy nostalgic feelings people probably felt back when they originally watched this. Weirdly enough, I did.
I didn't even experience that.
Nice, nice. All right. So we're going back next week to The Next Generation with my picks. Which I have Q Who, which is season 2, episode 16. The Yeah, that's another, I believe, maybe the third Q episode, I think. Well, what season is that
again? Season 2.
Yeah, that's third, because Q's in season 1 twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the pilot, and then he's in that other one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's in one episode of DS9, too, by the way.
Yes.
Awesome.
He's in Voyager as well.
Good. I was hoping he was.
So the next episode is going to be a data-centric episode called The Offspring. That's when he creates a child. Great episode. Season 3, episode 16. And then we are going to do a Worf episode called Reunion, season 4, episode 7, where Picard and Worf have to go back to a Klingon planet. And Worf has to like fight for his honor, pretty much. And they're all great episodes. So remember to watch those episodes and come back here and we will talk about it. But before we go into host credit scene, let's see this ad.
Wrestling nerds, wrestling weebs, wrestling fans. If you're looking for a different kind of podcast, one that goes over actual big wrestling news, I mean real stories, not somebody getting divorced or baseless rumors or whatnot. And get some color, we got that. We also do reviews of wrestling from the past, but sometimes we also do wrestling from the modern day too, if it's something that interests us at the time. Other than that, I would say the main attraction is just three guys who have been lifelong wrestling fans doing what wrestling fans do. Cutting up, cracking jokes, and just enjoying the entertainment wrestling can provide, however that comes. If you want to catch Getting Some Color, you can catch it bi-weekly on Thursdays, 10 p.m. Eastern, usually.
Usually. All right. In the camera setup that we have going on in our recording right now, Chaz is number one. So, Chaz, what the hell have you been watching, playing, or doing?
Yeah, so pretty straightforward. Not a whole lot of stuff. Still just churning through Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I just got to Mount Coral, or Corel, as they say in the game.
Everything's mispronounced wrong in Final Fantasy, I guess.
Yeah. Yep, I don't get it. It's fine. My entire childhood was a lie. I pronounced everything the wrong way, but enjoying the game still. Just it's been great. The game might have the most, like, as far as like a Final Fantasy game, it has like the most diversity in mini games ever. Like, there's a piano mini game that is like an intense rhythm game that uses both of the analog sticks. That's really fun. There's, of course, the card game, Queen's Blood. There's the tactical game that existed already, Fort Condor. There's so many mini games. It's great. So I've just enjoyed doing that. And it's all ridiculous, too. Like, it doesn't take itself too seriously, at least in those moments. So it's really fun. I finished season two of Bastard, Heavy Metal Dark Fantasy. It is pretty good. Man, just weird. Just let's reference a bunch of metal bands and make some crazy anime nonsense. It's one of them deals. And like, you know, like in the typical whole thing, like it takes a piss out of itself where it's like the main character's like, "Well, I'm the greatest. I can't die because I'm the hero. I'm literally just like basically says plot armor." And he gets cut in half, and then he comes back to life, and he's like, plot armor. It's kind of funny. I guess they're going to make a season three, because effectively the God of Destruction was revived at the end of season two. Big spoilers for those, so you guys are welcome. it's I don't know, it's a big cliffhanger, so I don't know if either everybody just died or they're going to let us know how it plays out. I started watching, there's a TV sitcom called Animal Control. Season one was that came out last year. It's pretty good. Joel McHale's in it.
Jeff Winger.
Yeah, it's effectively like, it's not as good as Community, and it's not as good as Parks and Rec, but it's got some moments in it that are pretty hilarious, and it reminds you of both of those shows kind of put together with like a little hint of Brooklyn Nine-Nine humor in it. So it's pretty funny. We enjoy it. We actually just watched episode 3 tonight of season 2. But yeah, it's out now, so it's been fun to watch. Still watching through episodes of Unluck Undead, but I won't go into much more of that. Pokemon has a new set that just dropped, Temporal Forces. Or it hasn't dropped yet, actually. It comes out Friday, but I'm a good bean, and I got my case of Pokemon packs. And I could not get my camera set up in a way that would make it make sense to open them, and I got frustrated. So I was like, you know what? I don't have a whole lot of time to play with. I'm just going to burn through these because I have more product coming later. And I opened my boxes, and I'm glad I didn't open them on stream because it might have been the worst case I've ever opened. Like, normally one box guarantees at least one illustrated rare, if not more. I opened an entire case, and I opened one. Ooh. So it was a shit box. But I did get stuff I needed to play. Of course, I got to buy a bunch more stuff because I opened a shit box. I didn't get all the stuff I need. So there's that. And then, of course, I played tonight, as I normally do from our weekly, which was fun. Tested out some new stuff. There's a neat new, it's called a Future Box deck. It's kind of cool to play with. we're all getting prepared for the upcoming stuff. I signed up and got all my stuff official for Nationals and whatnot in New Orleans this June. So, Lorcana, I got to actually play in my first local in the area, and it's not really an official local. It's just a group of people that get together are playing, but that was kind of fun, and I got to become the asshole. I got to do the asshole thing, and I made some guy really salty and complain, and he left. So, like, when you play these games, like, Lorcana, you know, right now is mostly a 1v1 game, but you can play it multiplayer. A lot of the cards don't specify an opponent. They say each opponent. So I had a combination of things that effectively let me make all of my opponents discard multiple cards, but each time they discarded a card, I got to draw a card. So on the fourth turn of our game, I made, in a five-player game, I made everyone discard three cards, and I drew 12 cards. And people were not doing anything remotely close to that power level. And this one guy's like, well, fuck, you just made me discard everything I was doing. And he's just really mad. And, like, no one could do anything because every time they would draw and they were like, oh, well, I don't have enough resource to play what I had because you made me discard all my cards I would use to make resources and then play cards. So, and if I hold on to it, you're going to make me discard it. And that's exactly what I did. This is kind of funny. This is very salt-inducing. But had fun playing Lorcana. Someone played Pixelborn here and there too. So they announced today, this is the news part, and then I'll be done with my section. They actually had a big broadcast today for Lorcana and officially announced the fourth set that's coming out in May, but they also announced the regionals and national championships and the world championships that are going to be happening. And I couldn't be more pissed about it because the first regional event is at the end of May on a time I can't go. I have to work the whole weekend. It's in Atlanta. And then the second one that they've announced is in Chicago, and it is the same weekend as Pokemon Nationals. How dare they?
They're competing. These were destined to go.
So, I've already now just, like, crippled a lot of my chances of trying to go and compete for the chance of qualifying for Nationals and Worlds because – you know, there's only so many chances you're going to have. They're going to have at least four more North American events, bigger events. And they haven't announced all of the ways you can qualify for these things. I don't know how it's going to work yet. We're going to have to wait and see. But I'm glad to hear the game's expanding. They announced a new multiplayer mode or multiplayer game with it, too. I don't know much about that. That's most of what I've been doing this week, because I had a lot of work shifts this week, just been playing a ton of Final Fantasy. I think I'm like 35 hours in or something. So,
Nice.
That's all I got. Nice.
All right. Nice. I've been playing Yakuza 0. Yay. Been streaming it. I will say there's a lot of cutscenes in the beginning, I think.
You're at the beginning, like setting everything up. It'll like dump you into the world pretty soon. It'll be like, okay, you can do the story or you can do any of these other 30 things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying this story. It's like a combination of fucking Sopranos and anime, which is like two good things, I think. the beat 'em up portion of the game is kind of challenging for me a little bit because I haven't played a beat 'em up in a long time. So I got to like learn all the strats, and I need to like, I keep on forgetting to use my skill points to
unlock. Do the heat actions.
Yeah. And I didn't know you could switch like from brawler to the other styles.
I wonder why you are only in the one stance.
Yeah. I just found out. But the one that I, the level that I really liked is when you had to get out of the Dojima family, and you literally going through this whole building. You like go through a fucking bathroom and you fight these Yakuza members. And then like one of the lieutenants is like chasing you with a katana, I think, or whatever the short sword they call it. And then you fight the main lieutenant that like is backstabbing you at the end, and I loved it. It's so good so far. I suck at karaoke, by the way. I don't know what it is. I try to like match the rhythm. I just can't do it. Also, I just found out about the big tall dude that like shakes you down, Mr. Shakedown, I think it's called.
The guy that shakes you down, Mr. Shakedown.
Yeah. Yeah, the tutorial is funny. He's like, I'm going to beat you up and take all your money. And then he beats you up and he goes, I'm not taking your money this time, but next time I will.
So the game's warning you. You watch out for this guy.
Yeah. So I'm digging it. I'm still like, I'm only on chapter two, but I'm just like exploring it and I'm having fun with it. What else did I do? I didn't play any other games. That was the only main game. I mean, I dabbled in Overwatch, but I literally could play with that with my, you know, eyes closed, I think, at this point. I did have a weird fucking dream last night about Cody Rhodes and finishing his story. So
he finished his story all over your face in this dream.
It's like the same thing. I was like, this is gonna be some weird Nocturnal Emission joke, isn't it?
How he finished the story, which by the way, he didn't. It didn't end in a fucking wrestling ring. It ended in like the stands and stuff, and like Triple H was like by the concession stand buying a hot dog. Cody Rhodes comes up behind Triple H and punches Triple H in the face. And then Triple H unzips his jacket and he has the fucking Undisputed Championship. And he says, you're not getting this title. He pedigrees him. Roman pins him 1, 2, 3. And they all do suck it to Cody Rhodes.
Sounds like AI came up with that.
Yeah.
AI's invaded your dreams.
It's funny, Triple H is like buying a hot dog and then like the hot dog fell on the floor and he got so angry.
Yeah, I'd be angry too.
Yeah.
Rude, there was a hot dog.
There was other weird like fucking like stuff in there, like Paul Heyman was hanging out with Mickey Mouse. My dream was all fucking weird, bro.
Oh, hi, no, it's a tribal chief.
What did you eat before you went to sleep that night?
Eggplant.
Eggplant?
That's it. It's eggplant.
Yeah. I thought he was going to say meat. He went to Disney and had one of those 1-pound turkey legs.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
But I had one of those like dreams that you wake up and you're just like, did WrestleMania happen? And then you're just like, no, it's just a dream. Like, you know when you wake up and you're just like, did that happen? And you don't know if like it really happened. Like, even if it's like so fucking freaky, like it feels like I was what's that word? I don't know the word right now. So fucking late.
It still felt real to you, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's actually lucid. Pretty good.
Lucid dream. Yeah, there you go.
I've had two lucid dreams now since Evie was born that she died, and that is the most awful fucking feeling ever. Yeah. So guess who went and like slapped her kid in the face at 4 a.m. You can
control your dreams.
No, what's
Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, you're right. What's it called? Whatever.
That's not what it was. Vivid dreaming? I don't know.
Vivid dreaming. Yeah. Dream
is also you're aware that you're in a dream. Like I was aware I was in a dream. I was self-aware that I was there, but I wasn't there. Type of thing.
I get that kind of shit all the time. The only dream shit I ever remember is me thinking, oh, "Fuck, that alarm's gonna go off in a second."
I agree. Right here, by definition, it's that you become aware that you were in a dream while dreaming. So then it feels like it's real. So that is the definition of a lucid dream. I got you on that, Dubs. But yeah, no, yeah, being a parent sucks in that way. Yeah.
Why'd you do it?
I don't know. Listen, sometimes you're supposed to remove the cake batter before the oven turns on.
Jesus Christ.
Cody did finish the story. He
did.
He solved racism, remember?
Yeah, he solved.
And liberty. Beautiful baby girl. Hey, okay, let's move on.
Yeah, let's get into happy thoughts.
I thought those were happy thoughts. I thought that was the point. He finished the story.
Well, he didn't finish the story in my dream. Fucking Triple H got mad that his hot dog was dropped. And then he got
cornered. I finished my tribal chief.
Yep. I think that's it. Yakuza Zero, Weird Dream. I'm excited. Netflix tomorrow is premiering The Three Body Problem, which is a novel, sci-fi show. Go watch a trailer. I also found out that there's going to be a Terminator anime coming out on Netflix. Did you guys hear about that?
No,
that's interesting.
I just found out about that. Go on your coming soon. I mean, you don't see anything. It just does the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and it's like Terminator text and stuff saying coming soon.
Oh, that just reminded me of another thing that's coming really soon. I think tomorrow, Amazon Prime, Roadhouse, a new Roadhouse comes out.
Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, the Jake Gyllenhaal, Conor McGregor Roadhouse, which I know, right? I'm like, it hurts. Why would you do it? What'd you do if you massacred my baby boy?
Yeah, that's stuff you just leave alone. But I digress. That's all I've done. Andy, what about you?
I was starved for Formula One stuff this week, so I watched the 12 Hours of Sebring, and I didn't watch it for long. I got bored. A fan of IMSA or WEC or someone get at me and tell me how I get into endurance racing, because it's not working. It's just not the same. It doesn't seem to have the same amount of drama. It's just it feels low stakes because of how long it takes, and there are a lot more yellow flags. So
how long have you been trying to watch it?
This year since it started.
Well, I mean, you know what they say: it's not a sprint; it's a marathon.
It sure is. It's an endurance.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. That's a terrible joke.
I watched a bunch of extra Deep Space Nine. I already talked about that. I watched South Park Enter the Panderverse. It was kind of funny, I guess. the premise is really funny, and there's a lot of few good jokes. Like put a chick in it, make her gay and lame. Like, that's hilarious. I like that a lot. But I don't know. Like, it didn't hit the same as the other recent South Park stuff I've watched. I don't know. There's another new one out now. I can't remember what. South Park Not for Children. I've watched it yet. I'll probably watch it because I got Paramount Plus, so I could watch all the Star Trek jazz and also watch some other stuff on there. I watched Chinatown. When's the last time you guys watched Chinatown?
It's been a long time.
Long time.
I hadn't watched it for a long time, and that is one of the best examples of something that, like what we're doing now, we watch stuff and we try to think critically about it and we discuss it and all this other stuff. I appreciated Chinatown way more now than when I saw it originally. When I saw it originally, I liked it a lot. Oh, man, that movie's really cool. But now I've seen a lot of film noir. I've like read Raymond Chandler books even. And also I just watched a lot of film in general. And that is a really well-made movie. I liked it a lot. Little long. It's a little long. But no, it's great. It's worth revisiting. It's on Paramount or Netflix or whatever. I was just like scrolling on my Amazon Fire Stick. I was like, oh, Chinatown, I'll put that on. And then after it started, I was like, wait, isn't this movie like 3 fucking hours long or something? So I had to take a break in the middle of it, but no big deal.
Now you gotta watch Two Jakes. Good luck.
I've seen it before, and I didn't like it that much. I don't know. I might try it again. I might not.
I thought it was okay. It was decent. Chinatown.
It's not Chinatown. Forget it, Jake. It's not Chinatown.
Yeah.
I think it's just game stuff. Yeah, I played more Diablo 2. We got up to the third world and we stopped for now. We're going to play again. I haven't been able to get through it that quickly because now there's three of us playing it. So I got to sync three fucking schedules up to play any Diablo now. So I don't know when that's going to happen. And I played a ton of Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. This isn't going to mean anything to any of you, but it might to some of our listeners. I got up to, I got done with chapter 7 and I'm on chapter 8. Holy shit. Holy shit, that game like gets really like really interesting, really serious. And then what they do with chapter 8 as far as like gameplay direction goes, really interesting, really cool. And I really should have seen it coming and I didn't. And I'm enjoying the hell out of that game, but that's all I can really say about it. And I recorded and published several more episodes, well, shorts of Big Trouble Rips, which by the time you're hearing this, it will be like in full swing. You know, the lead, I've been pumping videos into it. And by the time the episode comes out where I first mentioned it, there will be plenty for you to go watch. So yeah, go check it out. I'm actually out of Formula One cards now, so you don't have to suffer through those anymore. It's just Pokemon. And I think I got a couple Island and Ginter packs left, like three. So there's not many more of those. But I've been having a lot of fun doing it, and I'm getting into a good rhythm. So I'm hoping people like it. Yeah, let me know. Let me know what you like.
My favorite thing is like, oh, I need to do the card thing where you have to like count the cards and then put it.
You got to do the card trick on the old Pokemon series, but all the new ones in Scarlet and Violet, you don't have to do that anymore. So I just got to remind myself.
It's just funny. Just like, oh, all right, I'm ending. You just end the video.
Well, you know,
it's the charm. It's the charm. I like the charm.
Also, I put all my commentary into the Formula One cards, and no one's gonna understand what I'm talking about except maybe Zach.
Well, your F1 short is growing, I see, in views.
Yeah, honestly, like I said, I haven't promoted it at all. I kind of wanted to get a bunch of stuff pumped into it first, but yeah, people were just finding it organically. I did the tags thing, like you said, that's helping.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right,
that's it. I played a boatload of Like a Dragon.
Oh yeah, Andy and I did go disc golfing.
Oh, we played disc golf. Yeah, that's a game. That's a game I played.
Yeah, that was a game we played. Fuck the trees in Athens County, Ohio. God damn it.
Chaz got very heated. He had to find his center before he could go on.
Yeah, I was a grumpy little boy. I was a bit of a bitch about things there for a bit. I hurt my back. I got scratched everywhere. I still had a lot of fun, though.
Nice, nice. Zach, what the hell you been watching, playing, or doing?
I'm still playing a Wrestling Historian right now. I've still watched more of those Legends of Wrestling episodes. One was about, influential black wrestlers. That was really cool. I learned about most of them I knew about. A couple of them I'd never heard of before. But that was a good episode. Every time I see Ron Simmons win the world title, that's like, oh, it's like right in the feels.
Oh, yeah.
There's like this, it happened out of nowhere. I mean, like, I don't know if they really built that match. I don't recall. But he was just having a match with Vader, and he pins Vader. And then, like, you can see, like, this kid, he runs to the front row out of his seat and starts jumping up and down as high as he can when he won. It's like incredible. There was also an episode about Texas wrestling. That was really cool. Texas had like five different territories in it back in the day because it was so big. They showed, footage of like an old stadium show. The goddamn stadium was packed to the top. Like the Von Erichs and stuff and fighting the Freebirds. So it was like mid 80s, I think. But yeah, breaks that narrative about like, oh, you know, on their own show, they showed it. There was never any big crowds before. I've still been watching the old shows too. I finally got to the point where they started being WWF instead of Worldwide Wrestling Federation, which just does not roll off the tongue.
The WWF.
There's so many W's. Yeah,
the WWF. It just I always hate saying that. It's too many.
Have you ever seen that old joke? It's like it's when the New Day. You know how they do that little dance? They go WW. It's like they're in black and white and they're doing that, but they keep doing the W over and over and over because they're making fun of the old names.
The shows are starting to get a little bit better. I don't know if I'd say ironically, but like so far the best match I've seen was a match that involved Mr. Bob Backlund in it in 1978 against Ernie Ladd. That's legitimately the best match I've seen out of all these shows by like a pretty big margin.
Nice.
Almost might My almost might recommend you guys see it, just to see Mr. Bob Backlund in his prime. But I also saw Hulk Hogan debut, his Madison Square Garden debut, when he was green as hell. Like, if I didn't know, I couldn't quite remember when he really started out. So, like, he started out in 77 and then he quit. He quit for like a year.
Oh, yeah. And so, okay, go ahead and finish up. I have to ask a question about that match.
Okay. But, yeah, he decided to come back again, like, in 79. He's like, all right, I guess I'm going to wrestle again, because he met his fucking brother from another mother, Ed Leslie, Brutus Beefcake, his perpetual hanger-on brother. And he decided to get back in wrestling, I guess, just because he had a buddy to do it with that time. I don't know.
That helps.
Yeah,
it helps.
You wrestle 400 days a year.
That's true.
What was your question, Chaz?
So you never, I don't think you ever told us who the person was that he wrestled in his debut.
Yeah, he did. You had to read a little bit more. You were right. It was Ted DiBiase, but he wasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Look at that.
You had the alignments flipped. Hogan was a heel when he was early in his wrestling career. And Ted DiBiase was a babyface.
Weird.
Yeah, let me tell you this. Hulk Hogan was never actually a babyface. People in the 80s were just assholes. So
the Bobby Heenan logic.
Yep. Hogan's been heel the whole time.
What's really weird is to see Ted DiBiase without any facial hair. It looks strange.
Oh, yeah. God. Now I really want to see it.
What's funny is you brought up the Madison Square Garden stuff and the Hogan wrestling. There's a video I just watched that came out that was talking about 10 reasons, the 10 reasons why Hulk Hogan's like the most unhinged wrestler ever, or how ridiculous he is. And one of the things was talking about how he used to frequently say that Elvis was his biggest fan. And when he wrestled in Memphis, Elvis would always come see him. So
he was dead.
Yeah. So Elvis was dead. At least for 2 years before Hogan ever wrestled in Memphis.
That's how big a fan Elvis is.
Elvis came back from the dead just to see him wrestle. Maybe he didn't know that superstar Bill Dundee was not Elvis. Maybe that's what he didn't know.
I'll tell you something else, baby.
When did the Honky Tonk Man come into wrestling?
Oh, that was not till like the mid-80s.
Okay.
Which I'm going to get to something with that too, real quick. Also, I think at this time I'm running out of shows to watch, because one thing I found out is it's hard to find 70s like shows complete. There aren't any almost on YouTube. There's very few. And there's the ones WWE has on their network thing on Peacock, and it's all scattered. It's scattershot for the most part up till about the late 70s.
Got to be a story. So, you got to dig.
I'm almost done with the 70s because of that. I think they're working with New Japan Pro Wrestling right now in 79, because they're just like two other Japanese guys in a match fighting over a Japanese title. And Antonio Inoki's there defending the New Japan World title against the Iron Sheik in 1979. But I had to stop there. I had to stop there last night because I had to go to bed. I was like, oh, I can't I want to watch this match now, but I have to stop.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm really wanting to see that one. I also watched some Continental Wrestling, which is the Memphis, Tennessee promotion. The one Jerry Lawler stayed in forever. I can only find two episodes, though, from 1978. They were like, clearly they were like VHS tapes that somebody saved.
Probably all that exists of a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they didn't take care of their tapes, like the actual, like, you know, studio tapes from the cameras. Like, they're just fucking gone because nobody was thinking about that back then.
I mean, they're not Kardashians.
Right. So, like, some fans, like, that just lived in that area that was able to see all that stuff, like, saved all these tapes. Somebody had footage from, like, complete shows of, like, 79 all the way up into, like, the late 80s a little bit. I was very shocked all that was on there. It's interesting, though. Oh, there was a great match. I didn't get to see it all. It was Nick Bockwinkel and Jerry Lawler for the title, but something happened. I think somebody got bored and they stopped recording, and then they started recording again when, in their opinion, it wasn't boring anymore. So it kind of pissed me off. But not much else. Yeah, I mean, like, it's okay. Like, those shows were okay, but they definitely kind of jump off the page a little bit more with, like, the personality and the presentation a little bit. The best thing about it to me was the intro, though. It's just – it's, like, the greatest show intro for a wrestling show ever. It's just, like, fade in. There's, like, this porcelain figure of, like, two Greco-Roman wrestlers. And it plays like the music that, you know, Ric Flair's theme music, I forgot the name of it. Everybody knows it, though. And it just says wrestling. I was like, oh, that's so perfect. I can't find a clip of it to share, though. But it's just like, that's like one of the most simple but best show intros of all time. Then I watched Pat the NES Punk tear down the whole speculator sealed games, water rated games shit for like an hour. Cause I think he just posted a video about it recently where he's just looking like, look, all this stuff's like dropping off hard. Like most sealed games looks like they've had a drop off of like 70% in value since like 2021 or something.
Many of them have. Yeah.
Some are even are falling even further. Like certain ones like N64, like whatever the hell that Super Mario 64 sold for, when it was like some retarded amount that should have never been that high because it's such a common game.
That was probably collusion. That was probably someone who works at WADA selling it to a buddy to get hype up.
You mean like the original Super Mario Brothers for NES, that one?
Yeah. No, they've done it several times. They do it because it gets press, and people are like, oh my God, this game sold at auction for so much money. And a bunch of people write articles about it. They're all just being tricked. Like, it didn't really sell for that much. They just sold it to each other, but it still counts as an accomplished. It's all scummy. It's all scummy.
I fucking hate the grading shit. It's so, like, for people like me that don't really collect and just want to buy shit just to have it and to like either like with a comic to read it or to play the game and all that stuff. Or if I have like a Pokemon or a sports card, like every time they do this fucking grading shit and make it rare and all that stuff, it fucking jacks the price really high. And I can't get those stuff anymore because of, you know, stuff that's going on in the grading business. It really ticks me off sometimes.
Yeah, that's pretty much what the other video was about. Was just like this: somebody did a lawsuit against WADA over this for the original Super Mario Brothers. That whole auction there that they all orchestrated, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious how that's going to end up. but I was like, well, then it's true. All this whole like bubble thing was basically artificial. It was never organic.
they did it to make a bunch of money, and they did. And
it was the perfect storm with all COVID happening as well, and everybody was fucking collecting shit since they were all home and stuff. And it just like I still remember that article that Mario game being like fucking so much money.
It was like $100,000, and it was just them fucking passing money around with each other.
Zach, did you watch the Carl Jobst video about WADA and all that scam stuff too? When I shared it, that was like last year sometime.
I want to say I did. I'm not sure now though.
I don't know. He talks about who actually made the purchases, and one of the guys connected to it are the ones that caused the big bust in the coin collecting market in the 80s.
Well, I'm glad all this shit is crashing because it was artificial, and I know there's probably people that love that graded shit and say, oh, it doesn't affect the prices, everything else that's not graded. That's not true. It does. So I'm looking forward to things going back to a more normal price.
It's not enough for me. I want the whole collecting scene to crash.
Me too. I think it'll get, it's going to, some people are going to be really raw assed over this because they lost a fuck ton of money in their investments over it.
I mean, that's an investment. It's speculation. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Yeah, a lot of people are going to lose, and it's going to piss them off, and I think it's going to kill game collecting for a few years, probably.
It reminds me of NPCs. Not NPCs.
NFTs.
NFTs. There you go.
Yeah, because only NPCs cared about NFTs, man.
That is right. I was half right.
Fucking locomotive enthusiasts. Anyway, still playing Unicorn Overlord. I am... I think I figured out the way the game works now, at least in terms of like the amount of time you play doing stuff. You don't have to do everything ever, but I like to try to do everything ever when I can within reason. And like I said, this gameplay loop's so addicting, I kind of just do everything ever and not really think about it. But it's like I think I said last episode I spent like about 30 hours like already on the game, and that was just like being in the first country, and you can't do everything in the first country either. You're gated off from certain areas, and you have to be like really high level, which is like end game level, I think. So it gives you a choice, like, well, you can go to this country or this other country. Which one do you choose to do next? And I did everything I could in the next one I picked, and it took maybe about 10 hours. So yeah, I'm thinking going through these other countries are going to be like shorter than all that time I spent initially in the beginning of the game playing. But we'll see. Also, it's worth noting that some of that time's probably inflated a little bit because I don't really skip a lot of the battles. That's you know, fun. You can just like
play the game.
You can get in you can get in a battle and just like watch it play out, or you can choose to just skip it and just get the result instantly, pretty much. But it's like a vanillaware game. Like, isn't half the reason that you bought it is to look at the game? So, like, I don't skip the battles unless it's just like I fight the same unit multiple times. I'm like, okay, I don't need to see them fight again. But I'm still having fun with it, and that's about the long and the short of it, I suppose. It's still good.
Is it published by Atlas here in the United States too? Right?
Yeah. They Atlas Sega published it. You know.
I was reading something, and it's dumb bullshit, of course, but it is funny. I was reading something about how Sega Atlas is out Square Enixing Square Enix this year because and the reason this is bullshit is because Final Fantasy VII Rebirth only came out on one console, but Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is being outsold by Unicorn Overlord and Persona 3 Reloaded and Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. And people really? Are like, oh, it's over for Square Enix. It's fucking over, man. I was getting a laugh out of that.
I'm kind of surprised by that a little bit.
Yeah. Huh. Again, it only came out on one system, and those others all came out on like three or four systems.
It's true, I guess. But like, I didn't. Persona's grown in popularity, but I am surprised by like Unicorn Overlord sales. That's good, though, because I think I said last episode as well, like, that Vanillaware almost went under like making the last two games they did. So I'd like for them to make some money.
Apparently it's selling awesome in Japan. I don't know about the United States sale numbers.
I think it topped the charts in the UK, at least for Europe. I haven't heard anything about America or anything.
Sounds like they got a winner on their hands.
For sure. It seems like it, but that's everything I did. So.
All right. Well, we're at the end of the episode, so remember to watch the Next Generation episode. I'll just give you the name of it. Q-Who, the offspring in, not the band, the episode, and Reunion. Remember to watch those episodes and then come back next week, and we will discuss it. PP-Dubs is going to take us out. Everybody, have a good week. See you later.
Thanks
for listening. Yeah.
It's Yah.
Hey, do you want to be in the show? Make sure you email them bigtroublenet@gmail.com. They are also on Twitter @bigtroublenet. You can listen to all their shows on all podcast services. So until next time, catch ya in the next pit stop.